Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hey everybody, this is Matthew Soltysiak and you're listening to Not the Same Old Lions podcast. Using my sportscasting background, I speak with a variety of guests and interview key players to gain more insight on what makes this team go. As the Detroit Lions enter a new gritty era, we'll look beyond just the kneecaps when it comes to the analysis. Welcome to another episode. In this episode, we preview the Detroit Lions Thanksgiving matchup with the Green Bay Packers. In addition to our usual game preview, we hear from a reporter who covers the Packers regularly. We'll talk about how the Packers have done since that first matchup against the Lions. We'll also discuss areas of success and concerns for Green Bay. Let's get to it, Lions fans.
Hi, this is Billy Sims, and you're listening to Not the Same Old Lions podcast.
I'm joined today by Lauren Helmbrecht, sports reporter for the CBS affiliate WFRV-TV out of Green Bay, Wisconsin. You can find her work at wearegreenbay.com. Lauren also worked at NFL Films, pitched story ideas for HBO's Hard Knocks, and covers the Green Bay Packers on a regular basis. Welcome back, Lauren.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited for Thanksgiving, mainly for the football. Big, big, healthy serving of football.
Yeah, healthy serving of football, a lot of great food. And let's talk, a lot has happened since Green Bay and Detroit played in week four. The Lions are now 8-2. The Packers are 4-6. You know, after opening the season 2-1, the Packers went on a four-game losing streak with that loss to Detroit starting it. But now Green Bay's gone 2-1 in the last three games with a three-point win against the Chargers last week, just like the Lions did the week before. So let's start there. What was the key to Green Bay winning that game against the Chargers?
I know this will sound crazy, but scoring points. It's crazy what happens when you score points. Going into this game, the big conversation was, could the Packers keep up with the Chargers who score an average of 27 points per game? So it was a lot of conversation about a shootout. Well, it didn't end up being that much of a shootout, 23-20, but the Packers scored points. They scored points in the first half. They found the end zone. And during that four-game skid, that was the big issue for Green Bay. It was starting games so slowly. They ranked in the top three of worst scoring defenses, if not worst, in the first half of games. And then in the third quarter, they were the best scoring team in the league because they could always put up points. So now in this 2-1 most recent three-game stretch, the Packers have been able to find back the end zone in the first half of the game, which just makes it so that they're not starting one, two, three, four steps behind coming out of halftime.
All right. And that's probably, would you say that's been the difference in the last three games where they've gone 2-1 compared to that four game skid?
I'd say that, and just the continued development of Jordan Love connecting with his offense and his receiving core against the Chargers. Major appearances by Jaden Reed, by Tucker Kraft, who's not even the first string tight end, Luke Musgrave, Tay Wicks, Christian Watson scored his first touchdown since early in the season. Romeo Doubs continues his touchdown streak. So just continued development with the receiving core. Jordan Love had the first 300-yard passing game for Green Bay since December of 2021. So been a long time coming. Definitely his statistically best performance so far in his short career. And obviously that's just more things clicking together than obviously at the beginning of the season.
Well, you said it right there. That passing, those passing numbers by Jordan Love, 322 yards and two touchdowns. I thought it was interesting, if I'm not mistaken, Matt LaFleur actually mentioned that the Packers had not had a 300-yard passer in like 2 years or so. I didn't know if there was a little jab in there or if it was just a compliment of the current quarterback. But would you say also, in addition to that, is confidence growing again with him from the fan base?
So to the jab, I think it's more one of those stats that gets read out during the game that just gets relayed around. Like, this is, you know, everyone latches on AJ Dillon's longest career run from 2 weeks ago, his 40-yard run. I don't think Matt LaFleur had notes in the back of his pocket of AJ Dillon has had a run of rush of 38 yards and today was his longest. But if it gets announced in the press box, I think that's kind of how people latch onto it. But if people want to read into it more, I'm not going to tell them not to. And then the confidence, I like the way you asked that question, the confidence of the fan base, because the confidence in Jordan Love within the locker room has seemed fairly unwavering. After the game against the Chargers, Rashawn Gary said, stop playing with that man. We knew that this is who he was. Romeo Doubs, the wide receivers, continued to say, yeah, I mean, nothing's really changed. This is who Jordan was. This is who Jordan is. But I definitely think when the numbers start matching up, when Jordan's not throwing a late game Hail Mary interception that loses the game, similar to what happened in Pittsburgh 2 weeks ago, I think it's easier for fans to see what the Packers see in him.
All right, well, let's turn to the running game. You know, Aaron Jones was injured in the game against the Chargers. And, you know, he and A.J. Dillon are both averaging about 3.7 yards a carry. And so how does that injury bode for the offense? And how could they do without him if he's not there?
So it wasn't just Aaron Jones who gets carted off. Within 2 or 3 game minutes, the Packers' third running back, Emmanuel Wilson, was also carted off with an injury. They had to pull out a second cart. We were kind of joking that they set Aaron down and then turned it right back around and ran out as quickly as they could to get Emmanuel. So for one whole half of the game, the Packers only had one running back. Jaden Reed even joked, hey, I'll start playing running back if they need me. Now, realistically, that's not going to happen for an NFL team. Even on a short week, the Packers have already started making moves. So they signed Patrick Taylor to the active roster. And then former 1,000-yard rusher James Robinson, he's back on the practice squad, and people remember him from his Jaguar days. It's been a couple years since he's been at that peak, but if he can do it, he can do it. And so what we know right now is that Aaron Jones has avoided a major knee injury. He said he still needs to do some testing, but he caught a break, quote unquote. So that's a positive, but at the same time, so much of the Packers' offense and heartbeat runs through Aaron Jones. So losing him for any period of time is bad for the team in general. They used his injury as a rallying cry against the Chargers going into that second half. And with 13 minutes left on the clock in the game, he had been watching in the locker room, looked around and said, I'm the only one in here. And AJ Dillon's the only one out there. I should go out there and support him. So he literally went back out and was coaching AJ up to help him finish the game. And if that doesn't show you who Aaron Jones is, I don't know what does. So having him in any capacity is a benefit for the Packers. But right now they are bolstering that running back room, knowing that they have two injured of the three starters against their Week 11 opponent.
That's an incredible story about Aaron Jones going out there to support his teammates and coach up while he wasn't able to be in the game. And so hoping he gets a speedy recovery, because you never like seeing it when a player gets hurt. You already spoke about the rookies a little bit. Jaden Reed, I actually think he took a handoff, I think, in that game and had a pretty nice run for a touchdown. Luke Musgrave, both of those guys seem to be making quite an impact in the passing game early on. Can you kind of talk about what you're seeing from them on the field?
It's very interesting how immediately involved they've been, knowing that going into the season, Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson were the quote-unquote veterans. Again, only second-year players, so not that veteran. But Christian Watson has dealt with some injury this season and then kind of been a non-factor for a couple of weeks, getting only 1, 2, 3 targets a game. Often it was Jordan Love saying, hey, screw it, Christian's down there somewhere, just throwing up a prayer, and it was completely off target or just overthrown. So seeing him get integrated into the offense. So seeing him get reintegrated into the offense was a big benefit in this Chargers game. But I think in his absence, I'll say that word loosely because he's been there, but just an absence of impact, Jaden Reed has really stepped in. He's very fast and he's very versatile, and the Packers really like that. And then Luke coming in, having been very fast and very highly touted coming out of Oregon State, he's lived up to that. There is kind of a joke that he needs to work on his footing a bit, because often when he makes catches, it's the yards after the catch that will really take him from being a good tight end to a really good tight end. So that's something I'm hoping to see some development from, to show that he's learned as he continues.
All right, well, let's transfer over to the defensive side of the ball. You know, this is a group that we spoke about a couple of times. You said they're quite talented with their individual parts, and you said it was how can they do as a collective. So how have they been doing as a unit in the last few weeks, and how have they progressed since the Lions faced them?
They've been injured. That's how they've been doing. They've been watching a lot of each other from the sidelines. The Packers secondary looks completely different than what was expected of them at the beginning of the season, due primarily to injury, but also Rasul Douglas being traded to the Buffalo Bills. So that unit, they've been doing pretty well. The Packers going into the Chargers game were ranked 7th in passing defense in the league. And that's primarily because teams know that they can exploit Green Bay's run, the run defense. So leading into the Steelers game, the Packers had only given up an average of 65 rushing yards in the two previous games. And then they were just absolutely torched by two Steelers running backs who had season highs, and they ran for over 200 yards. So the defense has its guys. They've been injured. Jair Alexander, Quay Walker, Rudy Ford, Devondre Campbell have all spent time injured watching from the sidelines. It's still an issue with the run defense. So I'd say the defense is bending, not breaking at times, shatters at other times, is complimentary. You kind of get what you get during the game. It's hard to know going into a matchup what's going to happen.
Well, even though they've been injured so much, it's impressive to see how many points they held Los Angeles, the Chargers, because the Lions gave up a lot more points the week before to them. So it seems like Green Bay figured something out against the Chargers on defense.
They definitely did. I would also, I can't lie, the Chargers had some really, really devastating drops through the game. Keenan Allen had two drops on third downs in the red zone that, in my humble opinion, would have amounted to touchdowns on those drives, either continuing drives or literally scoring the touchdown. And there were kind of jokes online that the best Packers defender was the sun, because it was kind of shining right in his eyes. But even at the end, Quentin Johnston dropped what would have been a go-ahead field goal, you know, set them up for a go-ahead field goal. And he just had a drop on that one. So very much a complimentary game against the Chargers, very much a bend don't break kind of game.
I do remember that Quentin Johnson drop. I watched it happen and I was like, wow, that was a big drop, because that was a game changer that would have changed the outcome.
I agree.
Well, the Packers are heading to Detroit for Turkey Day, for Thanksgiving. Even though Green Bay has a losing record at this point, we know these teams in a division battle, anything goes. We've seen the Lions with losing records beat the Packers. And so we saw the Lions last week come back against the Bears late. And that game was in doubt until the final seconds. And so Green Bay coming in, they have a legit shot of winning the rematch. If they're going to do that, what's it going to take for the Packers?
Bouncing back from injury. I think in a short week, it's quite difficult, but the Packers projected injury report came out on Monday next to the Lions, and it was twice, if not triple, as long. And as much as these young guys have stepped up, they've done so against the Chargers, against the Rams, both teams that have had struggles in their own right, against the Lions team that for most of the season seems like they're really clicking. I would say that the Bears game showed some cracks, especially with Jared Goff's interceptions. Those were tough, but they won in the end. And at the end, it doesn't matter how you win. It's that you won. But I think against a very seemingly well-functioning team, the Packers need to be at strength. And so the running back injuries really makes the Packers offense very one-dimensional. And that is something that the Lions could really exploit if the Packers are just having to throw, just having to throw. And I think Green Bay fans will get flashbacks of Jordan Love overthrowing deep balls or throwing interceptions deep because he's under so much pressure and he's just trying to advance the ball. I think if the Packers want to make this a game, they have to score in the first half. They have to get points on the board because for too many weeks, they were down and out going into halftime and had to rally themselves in the third and then couldn't overcome the deficit that they'd accrued. And I think it's Thanksgiving. It's a short week for both teams. It's a rivalry. So again, like you said, you can't really say what's going to happen. But like we said at the beginning of the season, the Lions are looking good this year, and they proved it. They're 8-2 for a reason. They're a good team.
Well, obviously, the Lions are favored coming into this game. But just because you're favored doesn't mean you have the game. So my question for you is, if the Lions want to win this game, what does Detroit need to do against Green Bay to ensure that to happen?
Run the ball would definitely be a factor. I think having Green Bay's defense needing to respect the run will make it so that the Lions offense can run as a whole more efficiently. Because if Green Bay is playing for the run and has to play soft, then there's more options for down balls later in the game. Not turning the ball over, I think keeping possession. Green Bay's done a pretty good job of capitalizing on turnovers this season. And so winning the turnover battle for the Lions will just, I mean, almost in any game, if you win the turnover battle, you're pretty much setting yourself up for success. And then just scoring early and often, because the Packers are used to being trying to come from behind, but there's only so many minutes after halftime. There's only so many drives that you can do after halftime versus a whole game. So if you get on the board early, it just makes it hard for everyone.
So Lauren, I know the Packers don't play every Thanksgiving like the Lions do, but I have to ask, you know, do you have any memorable Thanksgiving Day game memories of watching football?
I remember watching the Cowboys growing up on Thanksgiving. My grandpa is an Eastern Illinois alum, and Tony Romo also went to Eastern Illinois. So whenever Tony Romo was playing football, my grandpa would remind me that they both went to the same college. And he'd like to joke that he was the better football player of Eastern Illinois. So we always had Thanksgiving at my grandparents' house. And if the TV was on and the Cowboys were playing, I was finding out that Tony Romo went to Eastern Illinois because Papa had to tell me.
Nice. That's an awesome story. Yeah, because the Lions and Cowboys are the two teams that have played every year. And, you know, a handful of years back, they added a third team to it. You know, I want to share with you, because you went to Syracuse as well, I have a memory that always sticks out, because when I was at Syracuse, I spent Thanksgiving with five classmates, and we went to one of their parents' houses in a small town in central New York. And when I got to the house, I quickly realized there was not a television in the house.
No.
Yeah, yeah. So it's going through my mind, like, what am I going to do? Now, smartphones weren't a thing back then like they are today. This is back in 2005. And I realized, you know, other than going somewhere else to see the game, I was going to have to come up with an idea or something, and found an old school boombox radio in the house. And so I'm like, all right, I guess we'll listen to it on the radio. And so I turned on the game, and they all wanted to play some cards and stuff. And then pretty quickly, they made it known they didn't really want to listen to the game.
No, what are you doing? Yeah. It's Thanksgiving.
I know. And I'm like, what is going on? I'm like in the twilight zone here. So then I got headphones out and I plugged them in to the boombox and I listened to the game while playing cards with the radio kind of on my lap. I didn't
give
up. But
the real question is, were you invited back the next year?
Well, we all graduated, so we all went different
sure,
ways.
Sure, sure. That's your excuse.
Yeah, but it was a great Thanksgiving, actually. That was my roommate. He and I are still really close friends today. So it did not ruin.
There's a happy ending. There's a happy ending in the end.
There is. And so other than like living in Cameroon for 2 years, I don't think I've missed a single Thanksgiving Day game by the Lions. Pretty big deal for Lions fans here. You are going to be at Ford Field. You get to experience it. How are you looking forward to that? Or what are your expectations?
I'm really looking forward to the spread in the press box. I hear they do really good Thanksgiving food. I am a pescatarian, so I don't eat the turkey. But surprisingly to some, Thanksgiving is my favorite food holiday because the turkey is usually the only dish that has meat in it. So everything else I can eat. So it's great. I usually have a plate full of sides. So I'm looking forward to that. And then obviously enjoying some football in between my meals.
That is awesome. Yeah, I actually got to go as a fan back in 2011 when the Lions played the Packers. One of my good friends is a Packers fan, so we went together and had a great time. It's a great event. The Lions do it right at Ford Field. You're going to have a great time. Thank you so much for joining the show and talking Packers, and I wish you safe travels to Detroit.
Thank you so much, Matt. Happy holidays.
You as well. And now here's the rest of the Lions versus Packers Thanksgiving Day preview.
This is Corey Schlesinger, and you are listening to Not the Same Old Lions podcast.
I'm joined by Coach Jerry Angers, named Michigan High School Coach of the Year, as well as Coach of the Week by the Detroit Lions. He's also a mentor of numerous players at the college level and some all the way to the NFL. Coach, it's good to have you here again to do another game preview, especially coming off a Lions victory.
Oh, one day after and 3 days away from our third game in 11 days. Love it.
Yeah, as a fan, there's nothing better than a lot of football, especially looking forward to Thanksgiving. Folks, as we get into this, reminder to you listeners out there, please hit the subscribe or like button. That is helping us build momentum. And yeah, that was quite a game on Sunday versus Chicago, but now the time to celebrate's got to be put on pause, right? That comeback, because the Packers are coming to Ford Field on Thursday. Short week. Last year, the Lions faced Buffalo on the short week. Now, Coach Campbell was asked how it might be different this year, having already faced the opponent earlier in the season, where last year Buffalo was an unknown quantity. Here's what the coach had to say.
It does, just because you have common knowledge of what they do. And then you just, as you watch the tape, you want to see how much of it still lines up, and their personnel, but they have the same thing on us too. You know, we've said that. So I guess if anything, it's a little easier on both of us.
So obviously it helps both teams, right? But if I'm the Lions, I got to say, I like this situation better, having already faced Green Bay earlier than the season, than last year's situation. What are your thoughts on this, Coach?
Well, I think you're right on that. I mean, knowing your opponent's a big, a big positive for you because you've already played against them this year. It's a division team, which again, you play against them twice a year. And so those are things that should be in our favor. And of course, it's Thanksgiving, the John Madden Turkey Day. And we're playing, we're playing at home because that's our tradition. That's our day. You know, the Lions and created it or started it or whatever you want to say. So there's some positives from that aspect that should come be in favor of the Detroit Lions.
I agree with that. Yeah, the good old John Madden turducken, the history with the Lions on Thanksgiving. I've got some amazing memories of that. We'll get into that a little bit later because I want to hear what one of your standout memories is. And so let's start, though, with the Packers. You know, it's a rematch. We beat them in Lambeau earlier this year with what was an epic first half. I mean, the Packers couldn't do anything right, it seemed, or the Lions just did everything right after that opening drive. But the Packers, they've won 2 out of 3. Jordan Love's starting to look a little bit better again. He's making some strides. So I guess, what are you expecting out of Green Bay right now?
Well, I mean, four straight losses to us. They haven't beaten us in Detroit since 2020. Love threw for 322 yards yesterday. First time since December of 2021, a quarterback from Green Bay has thrown for over 300 yards. 31 straight games. Coach LaFleur threw a little dig out there against Aaron Rodgers, I think, when he said, we didn't have a 300-yard game last year. So, again, they're young. You know, you look at Jaden Reed, we can go through their stats. Look at their receiving stats. 300 yards, 400 yards, 300 yards, 400 yards. Musgrave, the tight end. So, you know, and they're going to feed off of what happened in the second half of that game, not including the Chargers game, as well as what happened in the second half of last time they played us. So I think they, you know, they're going to have some momentum coming in. Another thing that I saw was Love, you know, this is the first time in a one score game, he didn't end the game by throwing an interception. I don't know if you saw that.
No, yeah. But that's showing some maturity right there.
Yeah, for sure. So that's the thing is, and you know, the younger guys are starting to understand, you know, Reed's a rookie. Guys are starting to understand the concepts, starting to understand the offense, you know, Love starting for the first time. So, you know, I think they got some big momentum coming in this game too, and a chance to not knock off the first place. Let me say that again. First place Detroit Lions. Then, you know, they're going to bask in that and their glory on what they've had.
Yeah. You know, I agree with you. I think they're starting to feel like they're gaining some momentum. Green Bay, though, is pretty banged up. The big one that we saw this past weekend was Aaron Jones. He's one that most people are aware of. He got carted off and hoping he gets healthy and recovers. But him being injured really impacts the offense because he's the main guy in that running back field. And, you know, the offense, it's middle of the pack, if you will. It's just below the Bears, actually. They average about 319 yards a game. And their passing game and rushing game are kind of equal in success. And so if the running game takes a step back, could that impact the pass game?
Oh, for sure. There's no doubt. You know, if we can get into our situation and know that we can pin our ears back. I mean, look at Hutch in the last play on Sunday. You know, he knew he could pin his ears back because they had to throw the ball. Look at the play he made where he didn't have to worry about the run. You know, Dylan's out too. I just read they have 16 players on the injury report. And of course, you know, from yesterday's game, nine of them are new injuries. So that's huge. You know, that's huge. So, you know, they are going to be a little shorthanded on it. But again, we got to go back to how well they're, you know, Love's throwing the ball a little bit better. But it's awful tough to play against a team in the NFL when they know there's no running game.
For sure. Now, if we look at the Packers' other side of the ball on defense, they're 17th on defense, which isn't a bad spot to be, but they're bottom five against the run. And so that run defense right there, that can spell a lot of doom. The Lions experienced that last year in the Carolina game and early in the season last year. So let's transition over. What are we going to expect out of the Lions coming into this game? I mean, our offense right now, they're number two in total yards per game, averaging 399, I think it's 0.4 a game. And they're fifth both in run and pass. And we talked about this last week. Having such a balanced attack makes them so dangerous. And I got to say, I'm expecting them to pound the ball because, like I said last week, I think that's the identity they want over everything. And knowing that the Green Bay Packers have been exposed there before, I think that just kind of adds both things together and says that's what they might try and do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. I mean, we talked about the balance, you know, that they can run, they can pass. Look at the game yesterday. We were in bad shape and we just went to the air. We took it down twice and scored and won the game. You know, the games earlier in the year, you know, we got those big leads and we just ran the ball, pounded the ball, ate the clock up. You know, yesterday, they had the ball for 40 minutes. You know, and so we had to throw the ball to get back into it. Sometimes the balance, and I'm going to bring it up because sometimes the balance hurts us a little bit because we think we can do things in situations we don't need to. And I'm going to bring up the third quarter again. We got beat 10-0 yesterday in the third quarter. We ran the ball to start the third quarter. We had a third and two, and we tried to throw a touchdown pass with Gibbs going down the sidelines. We got sacked and the game turned on that point. They outscored us 10-0. So, you know, I'm hoping, and again, I never question them as a coaching staff because they're the best, but you know, again, third quarter, hey, if we're pounding the ball, let's just pound the dang, but let's pound the football. Let's not out coach ourselves. And that's just my feeling. So I think that's part of it. We're talking, Matt, about it being so balanced that, oh, we just hit them for two, three big runs. Let's hit them over top right now. Yeah, that's not us. We're gritty, man. Let's grab our lunch pails and throw our hard hats on and get in the trenches and let's go.
Yeah, I hear you. The hardworking team. And you're right, though, that they, because of the turnovers and everything, they were in a spot where they couldn't run it anymore because there just wasn't enough time left in the game. They had to go to the throwing in the air, and that was really nice that that happened. Now, defensively, the Lions, they dropped down to number 9th overall. They're number 5 still against the run, and they actually did a pretty good job against the run if you take away the Justin Fields scrambles. And I know that's part of the running game, but a yeah. quarterback running is different than stopping the traditional run game. And so they still did well against that, but they fall into middle of the league against the pass. And I got to tell you, I don't think they're going to take Jordan Love for granted going into this game. Coach Campbell talked about it. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I just think it's, you know, he's connected on some of these throws, man. He's, you know, I feel like he's always been pretty poised, really. Just, you know, some of these connections haven't been able to connect on some of these critical moments. I feel like he's, he's making those. He's, he looks pretty composed. He's athletic enough. He's got a big arm talent. And you know, the run game has helped them with that as well, just for what they're able to do and what they want to do. So I would say they're executing. You know, he's executing.
So Campbell said, you know, in addition to Love connecting more, he said the Lions want to stop the big chunk plays because the Packers have been having some success with that. And we've seen it in the games with the Lions when a team can do that, like San Diego or L.A., the Chargers. That changes a lot of the complexion of the game.
Oh, I agree. I mean, and Love is spreading the ball around so much. There's what I see, 1, 2, 3, 4 guys with over 330 yards in receiving. Four other guys. I mean, he's spreading around pretty good. Reed can stretch it. And then Musgraves, you know, he'll catch that. He's a big target. So yeah, the chunk plays are kind of what have hurt us a little bit in the last couple of weeks. You know, a lot of them are the chunk plays, the big runs by the quarterback on Sunday. But again, we go back to the Chargers, and I think that's one thing that you're going to see us take care of again, continue to work and get better on that. And the good thing, even with a short week, knowing your opponent and knowing how well they spread it out, and you know, they're going to come in and they're, you know, Love is the best quarterback in the NFL right now. That's how the Lions are going to attack this game.
Let's look at major storylines or anything unexpected or anything by either team. I think, you know, the big storyline that the Lions players and a lot of Lions fans at least are looking at is we saw that the Lions can respond in crunch time. If you look at that game against Chicago, they had to play mistake-free football in those final minutes because one mistake, I mean, the clock was there and it was like the shot clock was ticking and you can't put seconds back on the clock. They got it done. So what I talk about this is I'm going to focus on Jared Goff here. He didn't have a great game. Now, two of those interceptions weren't his fault. There's another one that should have been a pick six. Thank goodness that didn't happen. But even with all of that, it's like the man could compartmentalize everything that had happened and then said, okay, we got 4 minutes left in this game. I'm here. It's a brand new game. And he got the job done. I mean, coach, you've seen a lot of football. You've coached a lot of football players. I mean, that's got to be a pretty darn impressive ability for a quarterback.
It's the it factor. Or the him factor, as they say on Monday Night Football. The guy, listen to his press conference, listen to what Campbell talks about him, you know, reading stuff on what his teammates are talking about him. He comes to the side. He made that joke last night about who booed me. He doesn't care. He even said that they should have booed me. I played bad, but it's like he takes every mistake and every little thing that goes wrong within a game, like you said, puts it in the back of his head, says, I'm not going to do that again. And I'm going to go through my progressions and make plays. He made the point, hey, there's going to be interceptions where a ball gets tipped. There's going to be interceptions where, where, you know, my tight end is going to a route and he gets hammered by a linebacker coming across the middle, and I throw the ball to where it's supposed to be. And I think that's the biggest thing. But for him to be able to take in crunch time, in 2-minute drill time, where they're not in a huddle, they're not talking, they're calling from the line of scrimmage, him to process what the defense looks like in front of him in that short throw where they're probably snapping the ball every 13, 16 seconds, and him to process the coverages and him to process who's going to be open and when to throw the ball, where to throw the ball, and how to throw the ball is just unbelievable. He is not getting enough respect in the NFL. And I think he knows it. And does he care? No. But does it fuel him? Yes. And I'm sorry. I think he is in those instances, he is in the top 2 or 3 or even not 1 quarterbacks in the NFL. I'm going to argue about it because he continues to do things. We win in the shootout. Okay. We win coming from behind, back-to-back games. You can't write a script any better than what Jared Goff is producing for us week in and week out, as well as the Lions. But Jared Goff is the clog. He's what makes it go.
I agree. I mean, even earlier in that game, that touchdown pass to Amon-Ra St. Brown, it's like, how do you fit the ball in that window? Now, I know they say, you know, if you can get pressure on Goff, he doesn't do as well. And let's be honest, that's true for every quarterback. But the thing I want to look at is how well did he perform when it was crunch time? Because when you're winning and it's early in the game, you can play loose, I presume, Coach. I'm going to have you speak to this in a minute. But when it's, you know, again, the area where you can't make mistakes because there's not another time to get the ball back. I mean, is that where you look at a player and you can tell whether they're going to tense up and tighten up and maybe, you know, overthink it? Or how does that change it? And, you know, what is it that you look for in the player in that situation?
Well, you got to look at him in the eye. I mean, it's the eye. You know, what does his eyes look like? You know, you think, and here's the thing I think about, too, when you talk about golf in those situations. He said, and I think when they threw the incomplete pass, He put it in his mind. They just gave us a timeout. They just gave us more time. They gave me an opportunity to get down and do it. You know, we threw the ball and ran the ball when we had to in those drives. I mean, we ran the ball for first downs because we had those timeouts. We didn't have to burn another timeout. Look at here's another one you go off of. The pass play to Gibbs across the middle. He breaks a tackle, runs across, gains an extra probably 8 to 9 yards and gets out of bounds. Okay.
Again, that was huge.
Huge. Those things have to come into play. You know, those things have to come into play. So go ahead. I get so excited about that because I coached in one of the best comeback games of all times in high school history. 7:23 left, down 14 points to Montague for us to go to the state championship. We scored. The exact same thing happened. Our final play was with 1 second on the clock, a touchdown throw from Reese Hazleton. And it just, those are things that, and I remember looking in those guys' eyes when we were down, you know, I hate to dwell, but when I looked in those guys on the sidelines, my team, and during a timeout, and there wasn't an eye that looked back at me or a head drooping that didn't say, Coach, we're going to pull this game out. That's a Jared Goff.
That is amazing. And, you know, I remember covering one of your games years earlier when you were just south of the bridge and you guys came back and had an epic come from behind victory that was back and forth. And so I know what you're talking about those come from behind wins and the multiple people that can play roles in them. You were just talking about Jahmyr Gibbs. Jameson Williams was huge. I mean, that strike deep, and then even that one earlier in the game across the middle, that first down play. But then you've got Amon-Ra St. Brown, who continues to be incredible. Now, again, Sam Laporta wasn't involved in the stat sheet early, but he was late. And like we said, he is contributing, and he might not hit those rookie records, but that's because this team has so many different weapons. And I don't even know if we've even said David Montgomery's name. And that guy was just amazing again. And so I think that's the other thing that's coming out here is you'd like to see somebody else other than just St. Brown being, you know, getting multiple looks in a game. But coverages could dictate that. And you might still see growth with that. But you're seeing so many different players contribute on offense that it's not just Goff to St. Brown, even though that's amazing all day long. That's not the only option out there.
And again, that's, you go back to Goff. He picks his times when that has to happen. He picks his times. He knows by reading the defense. Oh, they're going to, like, you know, they doubled him on the play, and then they ran the touchdown. I think that was the one to J-Mo. You know, he come up on the underneath route, and they doubled him, and Kopp's sitting back going, all right, double him, because I'm going to hit the dude that runs a 4-3. And those are, you know, again, but again, we have that guy when we need that play. We had guys in that game yesterday that made the big plays that St. Brown also makes. And that's, like you said, that's what's scary about us.
I agree. And, you know, now the Lions, they moved to 8-2 with that victory, and the Vikings lost to Denver. So that puts them down at 6-5. The Packers, they're sitting in third place at 4-6 in the division. Now, a win here is another big boost. It is a division win. It helps us with that as well. And you can even look at the bigger NFC picture. But the Vikings, they're a team to not be forgotten about. And the schedulers, I don't know what they did, but they've got us waiting for the last 3 weeks of the season to even know what this is going to look like. So let me ask you this. This is another big picture thing, is that the Lions, that they want to say they're always hunting and they're going to be on your front porch, but they're at a spot now that they are in the lead, and they are the team that other teams are starting to come for, even though the Lions want to stay aggressive. And maybe the Chicago game was a great game for them to have, because it was a good reminder of how quickly things can go the wrong way, but they got that reminder without losing. And so what is it you think that, is there a message that Campbell even needs to give to this team to keep them motivated? Or do you think it's just already inherently in there?
No, you do have to keep giving that message. Don't read your press clippings. You know, you have to, it's the NFL. Anything can happen. Chicago Bears came in and smacked us. You know, they smacked us, but we won the game. The Chargers came down and just scored on us at will, but we won the game. And so those are easy reminders. Those are the great learning tools that you can use in the locker room and at practice every day. Go, oh yeah, you guys are world beaters. You barely beat the Bears this week. Or, oh, the Chargers threw 38 on you. And so those are constant reminders that you can always use. You know, sometimes you learn more from a loss than you do with these wins, which was always, sometimes in a season, you kind of, oh man, if we lose this game, that's going to wake them up a little bit. You know, I think these are wake-up calls for our team to realize we have to keep going. We have to keep fighting. The message is stay 1-0 every week, and you don't have to worry about anything. Don't worry about where the Vikings are at. Don't worry about the Packers are coming down. Take care of what we can take care of, and everything will take care of itself. I mean, there's the old saying, take care of the little things, and the big things will take care of themselves. That's what Dan Campbell's preaching.
That makes total sense. And yeah, the players focus one game at a time. Same for the coaches. The fans, you can't help but daydream. I mean, you sent me a text message about a daydream last night about a Lions fan in bed going to sleep happy. And it had a trophy in it. So, like, people are daydreaming and night dreaming about where this team can go. So I want to throw out a shout out here about the NFL contest. It's the Fan of the Year contest. And there's a Detroit Lion fan who's representing the Detroit Lions. His name is Robert Gonzalez. He's also known as Lion Eyes. We actually saw him at that establishment in Baltimore when we were out there. Robert has been a season ticket holder since 1990. And if you're listening, I just want to implore you, go to NFL.com and vote for Robert Gonzalez. Let's get the Lion's Eyes, the Lion Eyes Lions fan voted as NFL Fan of the Year. That would be an awesome accomplishment too.
Oh, heck yeah. And that just shows you what our fan base is all about. So, and that's just great. Now I'll get on there tonight and vote for sure.
Awesome. Now, Coach, we're at Ford Field again, 2 weeks in a row. This time it's Thanksgiving. I'm expecting it to be an amazingly packed house. You know, in the past, when the Packers would come to town, you would get a lot of Packers fans there. I was at the Lions-Packers home game last year. We talked about that. And there was, you know, there were some Packer fans there, quite a few. But, you know, it was a fun game last year. And that was that game where the defense really stepped up and had like three interceptions, I think. And I think Hutchinson had an interception there against Aaron Rodgers. And so I'm expecting Ford Field to continue that atmosphere. It is Thanksgiving. You know, I did go to a game on Thanksgiving against the Packers. Almost got a little throw from Terry Bradshaw. He was throwing to a few people, but he had his arm in a sling back then, recovering from an injury. And so I got to ask you, Are there any Thanksgiving stories that, you know, Lions memories that stick out that you want to share before we get out of here soon?
Well, we when we were kids growing up, I went to, I can't even tell you how many Thanksgiving Day games I went to. What we would, we cook turkeys in the parking lot and have, you know, have Thanksgiving dinner at the parking lot. I got actually two great stories. I'm gonna throw the first one was with Steve Willards, John Willards, you know, my buddies from Maryland. It was so cold out, we ended up cooking our turkey in their van. Which today's day and age, people would be going, "Oh my God, you're gonna die of cancer." So that was one of the funnest ones. It was so bad, so cold out. We got inside the van, shut the door. We had the charcoal grill going, and we cooked our food on there and went into the game. But probably my fondest memory was Indianapolis Colts were in town. Peyton Manning. My son was 8 years old. Huge Peyton Manning fan. We ended up getting great seats, sat behind the Colts bench. Duke had his Peyton Manning shirt on. And that was the game that Peyton, it wasn't a Lions victory, but Peyton threw 6 touchdown passes. And at the end of the game, Peyton was on the sidelines, you know, standing there. He wasn't playing anymore. And my son said, "Dad, yell at him. I want his autograph." And I'm like, "You yell at him." So Duke's yelling, "Peyton, Peyton, Peyton." And Peyton Manning turned around and Duke waved at him. He had his jersey on and he pulled his sweatband off and gave it to Duke. And so Thanksgiving Day, some fond memories of that place.
Yeah, I've only been to one game at the place. Those are some incredible stories. Like, you know, the story with Duke there, that's one he'll remember forever. Yeah. And so whether you go to the games or you watch them on TV, I mean, I still remember every year at Thanksgiving, we'd go to my aunt and uncle's. We'd turn the TV off. If we started eating like a little bit after, because I think we'd eat around like 1 o'clock. So we'd turn it off. We'd pray. We'd get the food out. And then there was a room where the kids could go eat. And it was in front of the television so we could watch the Lions game. And that was just awesome. And, you know, I mentioned this earlier in another interview, is that I think I've only missed 2 games ever, which was when I was living out of the country and it really wasn't an option. I mean, I didn't get to watch every game. There's been a year or two where I had to listen to it on the radio, but Thanksgiving, Detroit Lions, turkey. I mean, those things all go together if you're from Michigan and you're an NFL Detroit Lions fan.
Yeah, for sure. And everybody in the nation will be watching the Lions play on Thanksgiving. And there's other games, but nobody, it's the Detroit Lions Day, period.
That's for us. I know there's the people a little far out in the Southwest there, those Dallas Cowboy fans, and they got their tradition too, and they'll be watching their game. But we get to start it off every year, that 12:30 kickoff. I love it. Can't wait to see it. Coach, prediction time. I'm going to throw a couple predictions out there. Nothing too earth-shattering here. I think the Lions are going to try and run the ball a lot in this one. I think that's the identity they want for their team. And I think they get to it in this one. I think that last game, the turnovers had them alter that plan a little bit, but I think they want to be a run first team. They are favored by 7.5. I don't know what those numbers are as far as, you know, I think they were favored by 9 at one point against the Bears, but I'm going to say I feel more comfortable with this game because we faced the Packers once, meaning we know a little bit about what to expect from them. You talked about how banged up they are. And so those are my thoughts. Nothing earth shattering, but I predict the Lions to play hard. Now, you know, when a team plays on a Thursday, it's not a full week's rest. So for both teams, they might not be at 100%, but I'm expecting the Lions to come out prepared for this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I think they'll use the we beat them 4 times in a row. They haven't beaten us since 2020. They'll use that. Love has had his best game last week with 322 yards passing. You know, it's another step in the direction of winning the championship. I think you won't see a bunch of wrinkles because you don't have time to put them in. Campbell alluded to that today, but I think you're going to see a trick play or two from them. We'll definitely hold the clock possession. I think that's one of the things we're going to go after, because we got battered up pretty bad last week. So I think you're totally right on that. I think it'll be a big running game, and now we're going to shoot for 1-0 this week and end that 3-game thing we talked about 11 days ago.
That would be an amazing ending to that 3-game thing that we started talking about 11 days ago. Coach, I wish you a very happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for joining the show and being on here as always.
Oh, I appreciate it. Hey, I got to throw something at you, though, man. I almost forgot. A little trivia question. Who was the quarterback for Saginaw Valley State University from 2000 to 2002?
From 2000. Did that quarterback play in the NFL?
No.
No, from 2000 to 2002. Oh my goodness.
He's on the other sidelines. I'll tell you that right now. He is on.
I think I know. You gave me a nice hint. Was it Matt LaFleur?
Yes, sir.
Woo!
Saginaw Valley State University.
Nice. That was a nice one. I appreciate that hint, because I really didn't know where to even start looking or thinking about that one. So yeah, that's a nice one. Also, before we go, you know, you shared your Thanksgiving memories. I shared mine. Folks out there listening, what's one of your favorite Thanksgiving Day Detroit Lions related memories? Would love to hear about it. Either, you know, email me about it or put it in the comments if you're listening on YouTube, and just share it with us, because we'd love to know. I'm sure there's some amazing fun stories out there. All right, Coach. Well, we're going to get out of here. Again, have a great Thanksgiving, and look forward to chatting with you after this Lions game, and we get ready for the week after.
Sounds good. Happy Thanksgiving to you and the family and all of our listeners.
Thanks. You as well. And folks, as always, thank you so much for tuning in. You can find all the episodes at notthesameoldlions.com. If you're listening on YouTube, please hit that like button. And while you're at it, tell your friends, tell your family about it at Thanksgiving. And please subscribe regardless of your listening platform. Until next time, stay gritty, my friends.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.